for the episode.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm sorry for that.
Coming live from Pittsburgh.
The technical difficulties, so that sort of delays us about 2 minutes, but we still have a great show to get to, starting with the American League East and our Around the Horn format. And if you don't know what it is, the buzzer rings every 2 minutes. So without further ado, let's get right into it with our first topic from the Blue Jays. Edwin Encarnacion's spring debut is set for next week. He is right now injured with a tooth problem, and he's expected to make his spring debut either Wednesday or Thursday of next week. So Encarnacion, he'll get a couple more cover days before ramping up his activity. But the current plan for him is to take batting practice Sunday and Tuesday before making his spring debut one of the two following days. Assuming things go as expected, he will have plenty of time to tune his swim and get his feet under him by the time the regular season rolls around. So Encarnacion played 146 games last season, only the third time in his career he's played that many or more games throughout his whole career. While he was slowed by a variety of minor ailments, he still managed it for a .277 average with 39 home runs and 111 RBIs. Furthermore, despite missing four games during the month of August, he still managed to put together one of the most impressive months in memory. He collected a hit in all 23 games he played in, heading for a .407 average with 11 home runs and 35 RBIs. It is that kind of month that showed just how valuable he can be to the heart of the Toronto order, as they went 21-6 during that month alongside Troy Tulowitzki and Jose Bautista. Encarnacion helped form one of the most formidable trios in all of baseball, and any of the three are liable to admit a big inning at any time. So let's talk about what we can expect from Encarnacion in 2016. Now, I think he's going to get about 515 at-bats, which is average as a whole. Compared to first baseman, though, it's above average. I think he's going to have a .275 batting average. It's going to be pretty good compared to both the major league and the first baseman category as well. All right, so let's move to our next player. From the Yankees, Brett Gardner, he has a wrist injury right now, but he is tentatively slated to make his spring debut March 16th. So his wrist held up to a full round of batting practice Tuesday, and he advanced to hitting against the pitching machine today. Gardner now faces one final hurdle, facing live pitching before he's cleared to play in an exhibition game. So Gardner built on a strong 2014 campaign by getting off to an even better start in 2015, hitting for a .302 average with 10 homers and 15 steals in the first half, and now to earning his first All-Star selection. The ball fell out after the All-Star break, though, as the 32-year-old was among the worst qualified batters, hitting just .206 the rest of the way while losing the speed element of his game. The second half decline would be concerning anyway, but after just .218 with a dip in stolen bases after the break in 2014 also, manager Joe Girardi expressed his fear that Gardner may be burning himself out in the beginning of the season. The end result had the lefty putting up a career-low 20 steals and another subpar .260 batting average. But his power remained, finishing just one homer shy of his career high. Gardner returns the everyday left fielder and number two hitter. So let's talk about what we can expect out of Brett Gardner in 2016. So I think personally that he is going to get about 560 at bats, which is above average overall, pretty high for outfielders. I think he's going to bat around 265, which is pretty weak overall, but it's average for the outfielder. And he's going to hit about 15 home runs. Average, again, overall, pretty good for the outfielder category. I think 65 RBIs is what we can expect. So expect a good season at Brett Gardner this year. We have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When I come back, we're going to move to the National League and talk about the Mets, Braves, and Phillies. That's next. We're back in the Inside MLB, and we've been talking about the American League East with the Blue Jays, Kevin Encarnacion making his spring debut on schedule next week, and also Brett Gardner is scheduled to make his spring debut March 16th. Let's move to the National League East now, and our first story, welcome to the Mets, and how is Drew Cabrera exits due to the injury yesterday. In a spring game, and how he will likely begin the season on the DL with this knee injury. And the injury was initially believed not to be too serious, but he has quickly escalated in the last 2 days. With Cabrera out for a while, Ruben Tejada and Wilmer Flores will step in and likely split starting duties. Cabrera will be shut down for 2 weeks after he receives a PRP injection, then will have to get enough work in to make up for all the preseason activity loss. So, there wasn't much excitement surrounding Tampa Bay's acquisition of Cabrera last offseason because he appeared to be on the downside of his career as a middle infielder who was struggling to hit for average and was sliding in his power indicators. Heading in to Father's Day weekend last season, Cabrera's average was down to 199 through 66 games as an everyday player, and the signing looked like a bust. A 2-for-4 that weekend started a hot streak. I saw him bat for a 317 average in his final 80 games. He's a decent bet for double-digit home runs, and another double-double season is possible in his first year at the Mets, even if not in an everyday role to start the year. One thing to keep in mind with him is that he isn't a full-season guy and that he's only played at least 150 games this season, and that was 5 years ago. So, let's break down what we can expect out of Drew Cabrera this year. So, I personally think that he's going to get about 540 at-bats, which is average overall, above average for the shortstop. And he's going to bat about 245, which is weak no matter which way you dice it. I think he's going to be about 15, which is pretty good. So, expect a decent season out of Drew Cabrera this year. Let's move to our next guy, which is Travis Tejeron of the Mets. No, it's not Travis Tejeron. It's Noah Syndergaard, and how he has added a cutter to go along with the changeup, curve, and high 90s fastball. So, I mean, watch out for this kid this year because he's adding something new to the mix. And so Syndergaard hopes to use the cutter early in counts to get weak contact and keep his pitch count down. The pitch, which he learned from pitching coach Dan Wortham, is still like a fastball, but generates less pressure on the elbow than a slider and breaks late, resulting in the weak contact. This combination and development of his pitches, coupled with his mound presence, is why some believe that Thor could end up as one of the best, actually the best, of the Mets' young aces. So, Thor, which is what they call Noah Syndergaard, made his much-anticipated debut on May 12th. And from day one, he was every bit as advertised, using a fastball that averaged over 97 miles per hour, the highest ever recorded for a starting pitcher in a season, with a minimum of 100 innings pitched. A curveball, a changeup, and a rarely used slider, Syndergaard struck out batters at a 27.5% clip, while issuing just 31 free passes and 150 regular season innings. The 23-year-old had an above-average ground ball rate, but the balls that got up did some damage. His inflated home run to fly ball rate was really his only blemish. It's rare that you find a pitcher with Syndergaard's overpowering stuff and great control, reliably in the product of a remarkably clean, repeatable delivery. His talent is not in question, and after he tossed 179 and two-thirds combined innings between AAA Las Vegas and the majors last season, not the 2016 workload. Invest with confidence with Noah Syndergaard. All right, now it is time for Travis Tarjan of the New York Mets. So let's move to him right now and how he homered Thursday is now batting 412 with 7 RBIs and 8 spring games. So Tarjan hit 25 homers at AAA Las Vegas last season and carried that power and production into the spring. He is unlikely to earn a spot on the 25-man roster, but if he keeps displaying that power, he could force his way into the equation as a right-handed bat off the bench. So one thing to keep in mind with Travis Tarjan, he's a 27-year-old kid. He was undrafted, so sort of an unknown guy for Travis Tarjan. He's not on the 40-man roster, so what that means is the Mets can't, they have to take somebody off the 40-man roster, clear them to waivers. That's a more difficult process if the Mets want Travis Tarjan on the 25-man roster to be a power bat off the bench. So that's interesting there, Travis Tarjan. He talked about how he bats and he throws, both right-handed. He's 6 feet 2 inches, 210 pounds, and he started his career in 2011. Made progress, bought a single A his first 2 years, moved to high A for the next 2 years, moved to double A for the next 2 years, and finally got to triple A. So he's moving up the Mets organizational ladder pretty solidly, and I think he'll be an interesting player eventually, but the fact that he's raking in spring might force the Mets' hand, might have to put him on the 40-man roster at least, if not the 25-man roster. So we'll see what we get for the rest of the spring and the rest of his career. Let's move to our next guy, which is Ruben Tejada. He entered the game after Esteban Cabrera was forced out with injury, and he homered yesterday against the Cardinals. And so Tejada, he will likely split time at shortstop with Wilmer Flores, while Esteban Cabrera with his knee is out. So this is nothing new for Tejada, who split the sharing the shortstop job with Flores for most of the 2015 season. Both are right-handed and share similar hitting and fielding profile. So the decision on which to use will rest on which way Terry Collins is swinging. Ruben also notes that there was some trade chatter about Tejada before Cabrera's injury, so that might be something to keep an eye on when Cabrera is healthy again. So Tejada, he suffered a non-displaced fracture of his right fibula during the NLDS, courtesy of a reckless slide from Chase Utley. That play ended his season and appeared to end his tenure as a member of the Mets, but the team surprisingly tendered him a contract in December, prior to signing Struble Cabrera and acquiring Neil Walker via trade. At the point, Tejada's 2015 campaign resembled his previous career best in 2012. Over the past two seasons, he has been more patient at the plate, while also striking out at an increased clip. Tejada has never hit more than five home runs in a season as a professional, nor has he swung more than five bases at any level since his 2009 stop at AA. As the owner of an empty career 255 average, Tejada appears destined to work as a bench player as long as he remains on the roster of a team's playoff aspirations. So let's talk about his projected stats for 2016. I think he's going to get about 335 at-bats, which is low no matter which way you dice it. I think he's going to bat around 250. Again, weak no matter which way you look at it. I think he's going to hit about five home runs. If you look at the overall, but if you look at the shortstop, that's weak. So I expect a pretty weak season out of Ruben Tejada this year. But you never know. Keep that optimistic mindset. Let's move to our next player, Freddie Freeman. How he left today's game with some wrist soreness in his hand, as well as his wrist. So Freeman dealt with some wrist issues throughout most of 2015. The Braves have been cautious in the early going, and Freeman seemed to be easing concerns with a pair of homers, and so that's some good news there. But Freeman, again, was homered to 118 games in 2015, the first time he has missed more than 15 games since becoming a full-time starter for the Braves in 2011. When healthy, Freeman was the same player he has always been, a doubles machine with a penchant for strikeouts, who has yet to take the power leap necessary to become an elite first baseman. Freeman's 18 home runs matches his total from 2014. His 23 home runs per 150 games pace would have matched his career high set in 2012 and tied again in 2013. At 26 years old, Freeman could still be growing into his power. If he can turn some of those doubles, 70 over the past two seasons, into home runs, he'll be one of the best first basemen of the league. Part of the problem is a tough home park for power in Atlanta, but until the home run totals tick upwards, Freeman is teasing us with potential. Let's talk about potential for 2016. So I think he's going to get about 565 at-bats, which is above average overall. It's pretty high for first baseman. I think he's going to bat around 290, which is good overall. Great, though, for first baseman. I think he's going to hit around 30 home runs, which is great no matter which way you look at it. I think around 85 RBIs could be suitable, which is good no matter which way you look at it. Score about 75 runs. Again, good no matter which way you look at it. And I think he's going to get about five stolen bases. Average to the overall, but good to the first baseman. So I think Freddie Freeman is going to have a pretty good season. Let's move to our next player, which Gabe Hernandez, and how manager Pete Mackanin said today that Hernandez, with a triceps injury, is improving, but suggested he will not pitch in a game this weekend. So, a right triceps tendonitis has kept Hernandez out of action since the Phillies had scraped through league opener. But it sounds like he's moving in the right direction. Hernandez, a favorite close for Philadelphia this season, will likely need to throw both a standard bullpen session and a live session before getting the green light to return to the game. So we've been talking a lot about David Hernandez. And one of the things that keeps coming up is how he's coming back from this Tommy John surgery in 2015 was his first full year, and what we can expect out of him in 2016. But this whole right triceps tendonitis, it's opening the door for other guys like Edwin Mujica to possibly slide right in there. They also have Ernesto Friere in camp and Andrew Bailey. They have closers that were invited as non-Russia invitees to possibly take over David Hernandez in case something happened like this. And for the Phillies, it's probably a good move because as his right triceps tendonitis continues to ail Mr. David Hernandez at 30 years old, it could be something to see, and somebody else could win this closer job after Ken Giles was dealt this offseason to the Houston Astros for a load of prospects. But if it wasn't for that trade, Ken Giles would be the closer. Dave Hernandez, former Diamondback, gets the call and is trying to win it, albeit this right tricep tendonitis, and he is just fighting to get back from that. He really wants to be a pivotal part of this Phillies organization and just trying to fight back to this right tricep. We'll see how he does the rest of the spring and the rest of the season as a hopeful Phillies closer. We have to take a break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be talking briefly about the American League Central and Michael Brantley. That's next. Been talking about the National League East with Mets. Mr. Cabrera exiting due to injury. Noah Syndergaard adding a cutter to his mix. Travis Tyshawn's future with the Mets. And Ryoma Tejada, how he will be splitting time and how he is the early favorite to start at shortstop. We move to the Braves, talk about Freddie Freeman's wrist soreness. And prior to the Phillies, Dale Hernandez struggling to get back from right tricep tendonitis. So, we only have one guy to talk about in the American League Central. His name is Michael Brantley of the Indians, and how he took BP today, which is good news. So, he continues to progress his recovery without setbacks, and it remains to be seen what the next step will be. This upcoming week will be a big stretch for his opening day chances. It still seems unlikely that he'll be ready for the start of the season, but if he can gain two game action next week, all bets are off. So, Michael Brantley, he's really the soul of the Indians offense. He's 28 years old, very young. People call him Dr. Smooth, but he wasn't in his best form last year. And the fact that this shoulder thing is happening could be a bad omen for this year, too. So, it'll be interesting to see what we get out of Michael Brantley. Along with him and David Hernandez, we've talked about them for a while. We've been following their rehabs. And Michael Brantley, it appears he has ahead of schedule. He just keeps defying odds. And again, if he can get into some game action next week, you never know with Dr. Smooth. He could be defying the doctors. Not just saying no to them, but like actually cool defying them like that. And he could be in game action playing for the Indians opening day. That's the ultimate goal. I think if not, he'll probably be up, you know, April 15th, is my guess. But this big guy, 6 feet two, 200 pounds, looking to recover from the shoulder injury. And again, this upcoming week is going to be crucial. This is the pivot point. This is the moment Indians fans need. If they can get him looking good this week, get him into games the following week. And you never know with Michael Brantley if he can recover from this injury, get back to opening day, and help the Indians solve Abraham Almonte's 80-game suspension. All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Cubs from the National League Central. That's next. We'll be right back.
been talking about Michael Brantley's good news, so bad I'm about to say. That kind of stuff. So he's moving to the National League Central now. Start the Cardinals and how Johnny Peralta is expected to return around the All-Star break. And with his thumb injury, he'll be in the cast for 4 weeks following Thursday's surgery. And again, he's expected to return close to the All-Star break. It's the clearest timetable we have heard regarding Peralta's thumb injury. But it's more of an educated guess from Saxon than it's just timing from the Cardinals' medical staff. With Peralta likely out for half the season, the Cardinals have some decisions to make. General Manager John Mozeliak acknowledged that other teams have come ambulance chasing, but that the Cardinals want to see what they have internally before making a move to fill the hole at shortstop. Jed Jerko and Aledemiz Diaz are the two players in camp vying for playing time at short, with Jerko representing the more established big league bat and Diaz offering better defense with the upside to be a league average hitter with minimal power speed production. So let's talk about Peralta a little bit. And while his defense took a dip in 2015, Peralta still delivered nicely in his age 33 season with the bat, coming 16 home runs and hitting for a .275 average in 579 at-bats with the Cardinals. Peralta was aided by a slightly inflated BABIP, but his numbers shouldn't be doubted, and he looks like he can be counted on yet again in 2016 as a solid contributor. The Cardinals still have no long-term options at shortstop anywhere on the horizon, so expect the Cardinals to finish out his contract. Peralta and the Cardinals will finish out the contract, which runs through 2017. He'll provide fans with an average that won't hurt you, a solid on-base percentage, and above-average pop at the shortstop position. Peralta's been fairly durable throughout his career, but he tore his thumb ligament with sideline for 2 to 3 months, and his offense is above-average at shortstop. He's not valuable enough to be worthy of constant consideration so far. So wait and see what we get from Johnny Peralta, because if this whole rehab thing depends on how long it takes, and this is really a blow for the Cardinals. It really is a big blow, because now Johnny Peralta's out. We talked about what would happen if Johnny Peralta did go down, and he did go down. I mean, their depth chart, it's getting kind of thin. Matt Adams, he's been prone to injury. Steven Biscotti, Randall Grichuk, Matt Holliday, that outfield. First off, Randall Grichuk and Steven Biscotti, they're not necessarily prone to injury, but they are young. You never know what could happen with them. I know Tommy Pham is behind them, but Tommy Pham is not too big, but one of Tommy Pham doesn't do well. I mean, you're gambling with Cardinals, trying to bet on Randall Grichuk and Steven Biscotti, and if they don't do well, trying to bet on Tommy Pham. You just never know with the Cardinals. And the Cardinals could be a team in trouble because they are aging. And as they begin to age and as they get older, players get hurt. And this is just another example of that. Johnny Peralta, age 34, shortstop. It's not that uncommon to see a wrist injury from an old guy. Like, he's not old, but from a 34-year-old, getting injured like that. It's not uncommon. And the Cardinals will be out with it. Won't have him until the All-Star break. So that's a big blow for them, and you have to realize that if you're a Cardinals fan, that he'll be out, and you're going to be relying on Jed Jerko right now. It's still Craig Garcia, all Demis Diaz. But besides that, they're pretty thin there. I know the optimistic person might be thinking otherwise for Johnny Peralta, but we'll see what we get out of him after he comes back. Let's move to our next player, which is Carlos Martinez, and how he fans over two innings today. And right now he's dealing with a shoulder injury, but he allowed one run on 3 hits and a walk. Again, we'll second out 2-2 innings against Braves. So he got 4 outs via the ground out and 2 via the strikeout. And while it would have been nice if he had allowed fewer base runners, it is still encouraging for Martinez to have made it through the 2 innings the Cardinals likely intended him to pitch in his first game of the spring. Look for him to go 3 innings his next time out as he continues to ramp up the start of the regular season. So Martinez turned in a terrific 2015. In his first full year in the rotation, posting a 3.01 ERA and 1.29 WHIP, while striking out 184 and 179 and two-thirds innings pitched as a 23-year-old. Martinez had a season cut short a couple weeks early due to a shoulder strain, but should be fine for the spring, without the added pressure of competing for a rotation spot. His dip of 3.21 and BABIP of 318 indicates that his 2015 numbers are for real. Martinez could be the Cardinals' ace in waiting, and at just 24 years old, will likely saunter the second or third spot in the rotation throughout the season. He features a fastball that can approach 100 miles per hour and terrific secondary stuff that should make a 200-plus strikeout campaign 2016 a strong likelihood. He'll be a popular name for Cardinals fans as someone pegged to take another big step forward. All right, so let's talk about what we can expect from stats-wise. I think it's going to be about 190 innings, which is average for starting pitchers. About 3.15 ERA, which is great. I think he's going to have a higher WHIP than most expected. I'm expecting 1.35, which is weak. I'm going to the 100 strikeouts. So it depends if he can get out of the jam. I think he will be prone to both the strikeouts. I think he will. Let's move to our next player, and he is a Cub, and that is Kyle Schwarber, and how he will be held out for a week. And we're going to be spending 6 minutes talking about him, so you will hear three buzzers while we're talking about Kyle Schwarber. And he'll miss the next 2 days with this knee injury, and he could play Sunday if everything checks out. So the young slugger, he wants to get back out there as soon as possible. And while the team will give him a couple days off to try to get him pain-free, manager Joe Madd said he was not concerned about Schwarber's knee long-term. Luckily, he'll be deployed either Sunday or early next week. So all Schwarber does is hit, and the Cubs had no choice but to promote him last year when it appeared that no minor league level could hold him. His 246 batting average was a bit disappointing, but he made up for 16 home runs and 36 walks and limited regular season action, and 5 more homers in the postseason, even better. Though he moved to the outfield, he still managed to catch 21 games in the majors, earning him valuable multi-position stop. And it's doubtful that he can be an everyday catcher if possible. He can play enough behind the plate to stay eligible in the coming years. How is a catcher-eligible player who wins 25 home runs and bats 290 sound? That sounds great, right? All right, let's talk about his production, right? I think it's going to get about 480 at-bats, which is below average for most players, but it's high for catchers. I think in about 245 average, which is weak for the overall, but for a catcher, it's about average. I think it's going to hit about 25 home runs, which is good for an overall player. But as a catcher, this is elite. Run totals, I think it's going to score about 100 runs. Elite, no matter which way you look at it. Stolen bases, I think it's going to get about 5 for the overall, but that's elite for catchers. If you look at the season that we can expect out of Kyle Schwarber, I think it might be an elite season for him. He's going to rise to one of the best catchers in the game, and he's going to be a force for the Cubs because all he does is hit. That's all knowledge is won by DJ Khaled. It should be turning all he does is hit for Kyle Schwarber because that's all he does. And the guys that are going to be behind him at catcher, Miguel Montero, and when he's playing left field, the guys behind him are Jorge Soler. So, Jorge Soler, I think, will challenge him for that left field job, but if he wins, he'll just be slotting that catcher. So, I think you can expect great things from Kyle Schwarber in the future. I mean, trying to get this thing going. But anyway, let's talk about more a little bit about Kyle Schwarber and sort of the advanced stats that we have here. And from his age 21 to his age 22. And literally, it took him 1 year to get to the majors. 1 year. But let's talk about his walk rate a little bit. So when he first came up at single A, he had the smallest walk rate of his career. It was at 8.3%. When you look at 2014, though, at high A, he had a 13.6% walk rate. This is the second highest of his career. You go to 2014 at single A, he was called back down on the same year. So they went from single A to high A to single A. When he went back down to single A, he had 11.5% walk rate. So it went down. And this is sort of strange to me because you go from high A to single A, you usually get a higher walk rate. But we'll see what we get out of Kyle Schwarber. And guess what? We still have another 2 minutes to talk about him. So let's keep talking about him. And when he was called up to double A, he had the highest walk rate in his career, 17.3%. That's fantastic. He gets to call triple A, it goes to 10.4%. The second most of his career. So they were really probably worried about him at this point. Gets to call to the majors, 13.2%, which is the third highest of his career. Ultimately, what the Cubs are hoping for, I think, is to eventually get back to that 17 to 18% range in the walk rate. But what I think we can expect out of him this year is about a 12% walk rate. A little bit down because he's a power guy and he's a free swinging guy. So it'll be down. But ultimately, if you're a Cubs fan, you want to hope for that 16 to 18% range. If you can get to that, he'll be great. Let's talk about his strikeout rate a little bit. And again, when he started in single A, even though he had an extremely low walk rate of 8.3%, which is bad, he had an extremely low strikeout rate, which is great, 8.3%. And it hasn't been near that in a long time. Cubs fans would love if that 8.3% strikeout rate was where it was. Because right now, it's at 28.2%. I saw the highest of his career, which was in AAA in 2015, which it was 34.3%. But imagine how happy Cubs fans would be. They get 18% walk rate out of Kyle Schwarber, 8% strikeout rate. It would just be thrilling. Because that's all they want to see out of Mr. Kyle Schwarber. All right, finally moving away from Kyle, and we're going to go to the Pirates and how Francisco Liriano was just recently named Open A starter against the Cardinals. So let's get into that. So the Pirates, they'll give the veteran Liriano the nod over 25-year-old Gerrit Cole, who has been delayed by a rib injury. It'll mark Liriano's third straight opening day start. Liriano recently said that he's looking to top 200 innings this season for the first time in his career. So Liriano has proven to be the Bucs' most reliable pitcher over the last 3 years, averaging 29 starts. In 2015, the left-hand registered a 3.38 ERA for the second straight season while tossing 24 and a third more innings. He also set career best in strikeouts, 205, and whip, 1.2 whip. Armed with a 92.5 mile per hour average fastball, wipeout slider, and an elite changeup, Liriano continues to give hitters fits and put smiles on fans' faces. The 32-year-old southpaw will anchor the team staff along with Gerrit Cole as he begins the second season of a 3-year pact that he signed with Pittsburgh in the summer of 2014. So let's talk about what we can expect out of Frankie this year. I think he's going to get about 175 innings. He wants to get 200, but I just don't think he's there yet. I think he's going to stay at 175. That's below average. Move to the ERA, I'm guessing about 3.45, which is good. Go to the whip, we see about a 1.3, which is average. I think he's getting about 195 strikeouts, which is great. I think he's going to get about 15 wins, which is about average. And I think you can expect a good, an average to good season out of Francisco Liriano this season, because that's where he's at in his career right now. He's been solid. He says he wants to get to 200 innings, but I think he just strike out too many people, and this pitch count is too high for him to get to 200. Let's move to another Pirate player and how Juan Nicasio hurled 3 scoreless innings today, allowing 3 hits and a walk while striking out 3. So let's get into it. Talking about Juan Nicasio. And the right-hander, he's throwing 6 shot frames in the early going. Pittsburgh is stretching him out as a potential starter, and with Ryan Vogelson and Jeff Locke currently occupying the 4th and 5th spots, Nicasio has a decent shot of starting for the Bucs in 2016. So Nicasio, he had an up-and-down season in Los Angeles last year. He struggled with his control to the tune of a 4.9 walks per 9. And for the second straight year, left-handed batters hit over 300 against him, a whopping 348. His 10 strikeouts per 9 was certainly impressive enough, but he's not likely going to get lucky enough again to boast a 2 home run per 5 ball rate. A former starter, Nicasio's fastball benefited from a shorter stint last year, averaging 95.1 miles per hour versus 92.7 miles per hour mark. And he will likely pitch in relief this season. With a mid-90s fastball, he'll get a look in someone's camp this spring, and he'll look in the Pirates' camp. But unless his control improves dramatically, he doesn't have much of a big league future. And let's talk about what we can expect out of him in 2016. So, I think this 1-year, $3 million deal by the Pirates is a good signing. Because guess who is in Pittsburgh? Ray Searidge. And Ray Searidge is going to help out Juan Nicasio, I think. Again, if Ryan Vogelson, Jonathan Neese, or Jeff Locke struggle, or one of them gets hurt, Juan Nicasio, right there to fill in. He's still young, and he's still trying to turn his career around. And coming to Pittsburgh was probably the best thing he could have done to turn his career around. The 29-year-old out of the Dominican Republic, he signed with the Rockies. On the beginning of his career, started in 2011. So, we'll see what we could have Juan Nicasio in 2016. Let's move to our final player in the National League Central, and we're going to talk about Andrew McCutchen and how he strokes his first dinner of the spring training Friday, giving him 2 hits and 13 Grapefruit League at-bats. So, the homer is a positive sign, considering he's a slow starter and didn't go deep in 32 spring training at-bats last year. Pittsburgh has lost 2 of its left-handed power threats in Pedro Alvarez, and the switch in Neil Walker, making it possible McCutchen will see less pitches hit. John Jason and Gregory Polanco are the only 2 lefties projected to start as positional players for Pittsburgh. So McCutchen's 2015 season wasn't too far off from what he did in his MVP season in 2014. However, he did have fewer extra base hits, hit below 300 for the first time in 3 seasons, and the stolen bases were noticeably absent. From a skills perspective, he is very stable as a guy that gets on base at an elite rate and makes contact better than the league average. Baseball statistics are anything but linear. Those are 3-year downward trend in McCutchen's deals is worth watching because it could pull him out of a lock status as first-round pick if he doesn't trade the steals out for more power. Another 2020 season is possible, but so is a 30-10 with some favorable home run to fly ball fluctuations. At worst, he's one of the top 40 players in baseball, but he can finish in the top 10 again, an incredibly safe pick. So let's talk about what we can expect out of him in 2016. Now I'm thinking about 265 at-bats would be appropriate, which is above average for the way he gets high for the rest of the week. Then you go to his average. I think he's going to hit about 305. That's elite, no matter which way you look at it. You I see 25, so I'm seeing a good to great to elite season possibly for Andrew McCutchen this year. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When we come back, move into the American League West and talk about the Athletics, Astros, and Rangers. That's next. second incident will be, we've been talking about, the National Central in depth, talking about Johnny Peralta, and how he'll be back around the All-Star break. Carlos Martinez threw in two innings today. Kyle Schwarber in his injury. Francisco Liriano gained the opening day nod for the Pirates. Juan Nicasio throwing three scoreless innings today. Andrew McCutchen hitting his first Grapefruit League home run. But now it's time to move to the American League West and start talking about the Athletics and how Jared Parker, his throwing session. And an MRI showed that Jared Parker has refractured the medial epicondyle in his right elbow. So, actually, really sad news for Parker and his attempted comeback from right elbow fracture in the minor leagues in 2015. He's likely lost for the season, and the question of whether he's ever able to pitch again in the majors has to be asked now after two Tommy John surgeries and two right elbow fractures. So Parker's rehab from a second Tommy John surgery hit a wall in May when he fractured a bone in his right elbow during a start in AAA. The path back was already tough for Parker with multiple Tommy Johns, and now he faces a tougher climb back from the mounting injuries. After back-to-back seasons of nearly 200 innings in 2012 and 2013, including a combined ERA of 2012 of 3.73 at ages 23 and 24, it appeared Parker was going to be a front half of the rotation mainstay for the A's. The A's will likely treat Parker as a starter if he's recovered by the spring. But one has to wonder if maybe Parker would be better to start pitching in a short stint out of the bullpen. Parker has been solid when he is able to take the mound and could provide some solid value. But it's hard to predict a significant number of innings pitched in 2016. And I'm sort of sad about this. You know, Jared Parker, and he's just fought and he's fought and he's fought, but the injury and everything that goes along with it, it's just not, I don't know how to explain this. It's just hard for him because two Tommy John surgeries, two elbow fractures, it's crazy. I don't know how he can stand all these injuries. And he might end up retiring. It's just the truth. We'll see what we have from Jared Parker in 2017 and beyond. Let's move to the Angels now and talk about how Jared Weaver was sent for an MRI on a sore neck and how his MRI revealed tightening of the nerves in his neck and he is considered day-to-day. So he met a doctor today to learn more about the issue with his neck, but the team has not officially shut him down. The MRI was prompted by some notably low velocity readings early in spring action. But even if the neck issue gets treated and Weaver gets back up into the mid-80s with his fastball, it's hard to expect much success from him in 2016. So, Weaver's skills continued to diminish in 2015 as he lost a full 3 miles per hour on his fastball and saw his home run per nine rate rise for the fourth consecutive year, settling at 1.4 in 26 starts. If there was a pause to be taken from the season, it's that Weaver regained his trademark control, allowing just 33 walks and 159 innings. It's that Weaver just really, the sum total was a career worst 4.64 ERA with an exit that was over 5. Always confident he would bounce back following his struggles in 2014, it is clear that he is in the back half of his career. Weaver started working out earlier than usual this offseason in order to build strength, but there isn't much that can be taken from his peripherals that would forecast improvement on the horizon, as his strikeout per nine rate fell to a career worst 5.9. So, let's talk about what we can expect from him in 2016. I'm thinking about 155 innings, which is low. About a 4.95 ERA, which is poor. Thinking about 1.4 whip, which is poor. 95 strikeouts, which is absolutely terrible. Thinking about 10 wins, again, terrible. I mean, I think the best he could do is have a poor season. Maybe he could have an average season. He could go from terrible to poor to average, but I don't see it going anywhere above average. He's just not at that point in his career anymore. His fastball this spring, Guess what the highest mile per hour topped? It never topped 81 miles per hour on a fastball. You can't be a major leaguer and do that anymore. It's just not the era that we put in. Because when somebody averages 97 miles per hour on their fastball, like Noah Syndergaard does, and then Jared Weaver averages 81 miles per hour, can't do that. And his velocity is going to continue to go down. What if he gets into the 70s on fastball? That's happened. Last year it happened. He threw a 77 mile per hour fastball last year on a four seam. That's crazy. 77 miles per hour. That's unbelievable. Not in a good way either. Unbelievably bad. Average fastball last year, 83.3 miles per hour. How can you do that? How can you still be in the majors? I don't get it. Okay. Anyway. Jared Weaver probably would be number two in the rotation, too. Garrett Richards, Jared Weaver, CJ Wilson, Andrew Haney, Hector Santiago. Possibly gain their way in there. Matt Shoemaker, Tyler Skaggs, Nick Trapiano. But there's not much there. He should not be number two starter in the big leagues. Just shouldn't. I mean, he was so good for so long with the Angels. Let's see. He had a 20-5 season. What year was it? Oh, sorry. Yes. 20-5 in 2012. 4 years removed. I bet he didn't have an 83.3 mile per hour. Yeah, I bet he didn't have an 83.3 mile per hour fastball average. All right, let's move to our final player of the day that we're going to have time to get to. And his name is Lance McCullers of the Astros, and how he is dealing with some shoulder soreness right now. And we'll see a doctor. So the right-hander's next session has been postponed indefinitely, with the Astros determined to get a read on the issue before having him get back onto the mound. Manager A.J. Hinch said McCullers has not bounced back well following his session so far in camp. Mike Fiers would be in line to start for Houston if this turns out to be serious. So this is why prospect mavens aren't lying when they say, "I don't know," so often when discussing cops. If someone told you a 21-year-old had peaked in high A and was crushed there with a 5.47 ERA and 5.2 walks per inning, which is 97 innings pitched, would blitz through double A and throw 125.7 regular season innings pitched in the majors, you'd have called them crazy. McCullers was so dominant in double A, 0.56 ERA, 13.5 strikeouts per inning, and he was competitive. So they took a shot, and it panned out brilliantly. He had the potential to be the right-handed complement to Dallas Keuchel atop the rotation, though it will take some time for that kind of consistency to develop. Walks are the biggest hurdle. He allowed two or more in 68% of his 22 starts, league average of 53%, and a 4.5 walks per nine in 216 minor league games pitched. There will be growing pains, but McCullers is a worthy investment. Oh, just getting news. The Pirates signed David Freese to a one-year deal. And that's surprising. The hero of the 2013 World Series, or is it 2012? Wow. All right. That's all the time we have for our show today. I'll see you Monday, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Right? No, 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. Right here on blogtalkradio.com. Head over to our website, MLBinside.com, today for all your news, videos, and the Inside MLB documentary. Comes out April 3rd. Check the trailer out, MLBinside.com, and on YouTube. Just search up Inside MLB. We will be right there. My name is Benson Fechter. I will see you Monday. Have a wonderful weekend of baseball, watching the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League. That kind of fan. But the Pirates got a win today, hey, being the Rays 4-3. Had a nice comeback in 8, scored 3 runs. And that's sort of all I have for you today. So I'm going to end you 40 seconds early, right into the weekend. Thank you for joining me. And as always, let's go Bucks.